what? This girl from my past, that ridiculous ass. She attended UMass and she passed every class. Walked down the hall with a stuck up sass. Broke the basketball plate.
Oh, see, it's time to pay dues, deliver the news. Like UMass, we refuse to lose.
Yeah. I like a really huge ass.
Bend over, take her to church, now she a UMass.
I think I'd rather die in a nuclear war than go to OnlyFans.
This is Curry X Sage. It's Monday night, February 8th, I think. The 7th, maybe? I don't even know anymore. Here's the story. I dropped the pod, or rather, I recorded the pod that you're about to hear 90 minutes or so after the tremendous win over URI. At that time, we had not gotten the news about the next 4 or even 5 UMass games being canceled because of all of the pandemic stuff going on campus. You could do an entire episode on that. Maybe we will, but I recorded this anyway, or I recorded this prior to this, so I want to drop it anyway, and I guess I'll just say that in the immediate short term, as frustrated as I am and as much as this kills our momentum, there is a silver lining, which is that I expect, from what I'm hearing, that Trey and Noah will be back or very close to back within 2 weeks. So, you know, we very well could have lost all 3 this week and not had either of them. And now, you know, we should have them both, and the games for which they'll be back would be Duquesne, Richmond, St. Joe's. And I have a hunch that they'll find a way to get another one or two in. I don't know who. I doubt it would be Dayton because it's far. I doubt it would be St. Louis because it's far. Maybe you get VCU somehow. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to play out. I'm concerned, but I do think if you had only those 3, I think you're in a decent spot to win 2 of them. And even Richmond at home, I think you can give a real run for their money. Duquesne's sort of borderline, and St. Joe's the worst team in the league. So you're looking at finishing conference play, conceivably 8-3, maybe get another game or two in somehow and kind of eke out a 9-4 type deal, which would put you not in the driver's seat for a top 4 finish, but certainly very close. Now, how they're going to seed teams, I have no clue. And that's again, we should do another show when we learn more and kind of figure out what the A-10's plan is. It's a real bummer, but I don't think this hurts us from a standings perspective. It certainly is a bummer because we were feeling the vibes after that win, and the momentum was nice. But let's be candid, playing 3 top half of the league teams without, arguably your 2 best players, certainly your best player, would not have been ideal no matter how well you played in that roadie game. That's a hard performance to duplicate 3 more times in a row, particularly when you play Bonaventure when you were set to play Bonaventure, I should say, on essentially no rest. So, let's keep talking. Maybe we'll do another episode. Maybe there'll be a fun episode in between. It's a bummer. We're all down, but the season goes on. It's not over, and enjoy the show.
This girl from my past, that ridiculous ass. She attended UMass and she passed every class. Walked down the hall with a stuck-up sass. Talk to basketball players. She like how they pass.
Ladies and gentlemen, and good evening, and a good evening it is, because I'm coming to you live from New York City, 11:40 p.m., about an hour and 50 minutes after your UMass Minutemen defeated for the second time in as many tries the Rams of the University of Rhode Island, if you even want to give it the dignity of calling it a university. A sweep, and boy, was it a sweet one. In case you are listening to this program and did not see the game, or in case you're just here to relive it, let's jump in real quickly. UMass And I want to get this for posterity's sake, because this was the kind of game where we're going to talk about this one for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. This is going to be one of those games that whatever happens in future seasons, you need to remind yourself of when you are head in the hands, head in the lap post-game after UMass loses a quarterfinal game to LaSalle 6 weeks from now, or 10 years from now when they lose to Fordham by 14 despite opening the year 22-0, or whatever horrific scenario you can imagine as a UMass fan, you need to remind yourself that there are still nights like this. Nights when Trey Mitchell, generational talent, all everything, and fringe all-league player and sort of heart and soul in some ways of this group, Noah Fernandez, were both sidelined with injuries. And when Javon Garcia, who I would count among your most talented players, certainly top three in talent, when Javon Garcia had what appeared to be his eye poked out and missed the final 5 or 6 minutes, and you not only defeated Rhodey, you defeated them going away. You put your foot on the motherfucking gas and you ran the tank right through the Kingston barricade. I have been drinking, so if the metaphors are not hitting... Oh, it feels so fucking good. If the metaphors are not hitting, you know, hey, they're not hitting. You don't have to listen to the show. I don't give a shit. But if you do, and you're moving, you should probably do so with the fine folks at Five College Movers. Call Pat and the gang, great friends of UMass Athletics, the UMass Basketball Podcast, and UMass Twitter. They've been doing game-by-game competitions for who can guess certain statistical categories, and the winner gets gift cards to local establishments. They are as committed to the community in Western Mass and beyond as you can be, and they are committed to this program. Support them if you're moving. I actually I don't want to talk about my wife would kill me if she knew that. We might be making a little move. I'm not supposed to talk about it yet. Got to sign some paperwork. It's not very far. We'll be a little more space. And, you know, maybe we'll have some equipment for the pod. Anyway, not important. What is important is that victory. And here's my first point tonight. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, on the last episode we did after the Davidson loss, I expressed outrage, frustration, and general anger about what I characterized at the time as the lack of coherence in the team's identity. I then proceeded to spend the next 80 or so minutes bungling my way into a clear-cut explanation of what I meant by incoherence, settling upon, broadly speaking, the understanding that Matt's combination of trying to do a lot technically in the half court and not consistent ability to get guys to give more of themselves and play really hard for 40 minutes, that combination led to a certain sort of incoherence. Tonight was a complete 180, and I'll tell you what I mean. In the absence of Trey and Noah, it felt like the team actually ran more half-court offense, more crisper, more coherent sets where the ball was moving at a rigorous pace it's not that they don't always pass the ball, it's that the way they were passing was purposeful, and the cutting off of the pass, it's a lot of that dribble handoff stuff. We could talk about the offense philosophy a lot, but it led to some great looks. And even when they weren't making shots, there was that stretch of time in the second half where Rhodey came back and tied it, and you thought, this one could be over. I think they even then took a lead. It was probably about a 10-0 run. even then, I wasn't actually that concerned because the crispness of the offense, like the popcorn in my mouth, was so emphatic and resounding and purposeful that you knew at some point we might pull this one out. Now, I thought we might not when JG went down. And the moment that I thought would haunt me was when Mark Gasparini sort of was trying to hand it off with like 7 minutes to go to Colton. They had like an 8-point lead. They got a rebound. You could go up 10 and maybe sort of put this one away. And you just like sort of threw it out of bounds. And you're like, oh boy, this is the beginning of the end. And it was not. So going back to the coherence point, as someone who's completely incoherent himself, the crispness of the offense combined with the intensity of the defense and the contesting of every shot and the relentless pursuit of every rebound. That, my friends, is what I think Matt McCall has been envisioning for 4 years. Not always very well, or not enacting very well. Because there was a crispness on the offensive end, a purposefulness, and even a touch of complexity, but not too much, just a touch. And everyone getting involved. And an intensity in 40 minutes on the other end, and great energy from the bench. That was a textbook Matt McCall win, and we haven't seen enough of them. But give credit where credit is due. That is what he wants the team to play like. Now, make no mistake, the fact that they went, I want to say, like 9 for 24 from 3, that's the difference in some of these games. They've had a couple 6 for 30s this year. You hit 3 more. I mean, it is, and I feel like there's been a lot of times in Matt's career where he hasn't coached terrible games. He hasn't coached great ones, but guys have just fucking thrown up bricks. And I've been very hard on Carl Pierre in recent podcasts. Not so much on Carl Pierre, but on Matt for playing him for so much of the game. He was fantastic tonight. 5 threes, 7 for 15. He really defended. And don't think I didn't notice it. And I was just so happy for him, and you know, pleased to be wrong, because you know he was just, you know, that's what, you know, that's who he is. That he had 19 points, he did it, you know, with efficiency. You know, he took a lot of shots, but like he was sharp. You know, he was a senior, and let's just talk about the great Mark Gasparini. You know, he had become a meme almost for his, let's be candid, horrific performances in the first 8 or so games of the season. And when Trey went down with that injury, and we knew he was going to be out for, you know, that game the other day against Fordham, and then potentially this one, I think people just had figured that what they saw of Gasparini in those limited flashes was who Gasparini was. And because he played so little and the mistakes at times were so mistakes, just errant passes, sort of like, it was just, it is what it is. But because of that, I think people had a misunderstanding. And I swear, as much as I got a kick out of some of the meme stuff, always thought, I know this is fucking insane, like sometimes you would take those hook shots and they would look so horrible, but like they would result in such horrible results, they go like clang off the glass, barely touch back, you know, the rim. But maybe it's because I watch a lot of games on a phone. I would just look at the form and be like, this guy's not that bad, not that good, but he's not that bad. And lo and behold, it says on Twitter tonight, but lo and behold, when a guy like that gets 25 or 30 minutes, it's so different. Because it's really hard to come off for Trey Mitchell. Come on for Trey Mitchell. Trey's going to play 30-some-odd minutes a night. Mark's going to get in. And even if he makes his first jump hook and he gets a rebound on the other end, what are you going to do? Keep Trey on the bench? No. You know? And so, and we've, you know, for various reasons, we've decided not to play them alongside one another. Which I get, but as a result, you're giving him such a tiny sample size of opportunities to perform that you just, you know, I suspect he played more time in the last two games than he did in the first nine combined. I mean, I bet it's right around the same, but the point is he was fantastic tonight, especially late. And when he hit that three, I mean, that's why we do it. That's what this show is. This show, whatever it is, it's mostly a commiseration. But sometimes the commiserating becomes just joint celebrating, and that's really what it's all about. I mean, you know, I don't think that the guys who do this for a living, and I say this as in like talk sports or whatever, I don't think they, I don't know if they'll ever fully get that joy of a lowly UMass podcaster gets when a 6'11", 29-year-old transfer from American University by way of a prep school in Eastern Mass by way of Russia buries his first three of the season to put the game out of reach against an arch rival. I mean, it just, you know, I don't think they'll ever get the joy that I and my internet friends got from that. I mean, that's what this is all about, you know? If I read more novels, I could cite somebody, you know, some famous novelist who, you know, talks about how life is hard and, you know, challenging and how it's punctuated by moments of great joy. And whoever said it or whatever, there's probably been many, they were correct, you know, especially now. You know, everybody's cooped up. We can't see each other. We're just sitting there on our phones 12 hours a day talking shit, you know, trying to find some meaning in this just difficult moment in history. And, you know, for a guy like that kid to hit it, it's just, it's a meme come to life. I don't know how else to say it. It's just, it's beautiful. I mean, that's what we're here for. You know what I mean? It's like midnight in February. You know, we've been in this 11 months, and I'm just talking into a phone about Mark Gasparini burying a three and the reaction of the bench. I mean, it was just like, that's what this is for. That's what this show exists for. And it can be hard sometimes. It's been hard for the last 4 years to, like, there's been many times as a fan, you know, as my kids are getting older and it's just, the 4-1, but as my, you know, and you just say, like, gosh, why am I investing the time in this? Even if it's 2 hours, much less, like, you know, a podcast, but just like, what am I doing here? Like, I'm rushing home from my kid's fucking swimming lesson to see UMass Davidson before no fans at the Mullen Center. You know, it's like, oh, can we go to, you know, 5-3 or whatever it even was at that point. 6-3, you know. And then they lose, you know. And they play sort of Fordham. It's like a middling, just boring game. And then you kind of come in tonight like, who knows? And then you get Mark Gasparini hitting that three. I mean, it just doesn't get better than that. I mean, it just, that is it, man. That is the chef's kiss. Mwah. Just so fucking good. So yeah, the coherence, that was the big thing tonight. Where do we go from here? You know, I'm trying to come down from the joy and the high, literally in this case. And holy shit, do we have a tough week coming up. I mean, I don't mean to be a buzzkill. God knows I don't want to kill mine. Anyway. I don't want to be buzzkill, but here's the thing. Today, just prior to this game, our game against VCU was rescheduled. Okay, fine, whatever. The game is at VCU on ESPN2 in front of some fans on Friday evening. Okay. But Sunday morning or afternoon back in Amherst, we play first place St. Bonaventure. So, tied for second place. No, I think VCU and Bonham may now be tied for first. So basically the two best, you know, I mean, I don't know if you want to say they're the best teams in the league because St. Louis is such a unique situation where they haven't really played any games, but basically the top two teams in the league in a 36-hour or, you know, 40-some-odd hour stretch, road and home, very possibly without Trey Mitchell. It sounds like Noah could be ready to go. His dad was tweeting about it tonight on Twitter. I think he said he's close. So that's really tough. And you have Dayton on Tuesday night. So there's no rest for the weary, you know. And I know Dayton has been very inconsistent this year, but they still have some real star power and maybe the best player in the league in Crutcher. And, you know, that's going to be a war. And we may not. And it looks like you have to assume at this point we won't have Mitchell. So, I mean, you know, and it's funny because going into tonight's game without Trey and Noah, I had kind of, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't love saying this, I had intellectually or resigned myself to the fact that we would likely drop four games in a row over the course of the next week, falling to 5-6 in league and, you know, effectively derailing any chances of having a double bye in the Atlantic 10 tournament. And then in turn, that had kind of psychologically, like, led to me going to that place where I was like, you know what, I am ready to just sort of, like, move on from this season emotionally. No, I would obviously watch the games, but I was sort of, like, in the early steps of sort of seeing some gray on the horizon and then knowing that that would lead to me just, like, watching the games with a different psychology. I think that's the best way to describe it. Not that I would ever not watch them. Not that I would ever not root for them, but, like, you know how it is. There are you go into each part of the season with a different, like, head frame. You're like, I'm fucking hyped for this game because, you know, when they're 3-0 or whatever, versus like when they're 10-19, you're like, I'm gonna watch this, but I just want the season to end. Versus, well, we, like what I was thinking, which was, well, we lost our, you know, stars, and you can't blame us, but I mean, I'm kind of just like resigned to the fact that, you know, we're not gonna like make a run in the A-10 tournament. That kind of like mindset. If we do, great, but you know, like I just had. So now my mindset is like completely different. But also, I still have some of that kind of like in the foreground. Is it, what's the difference between foreground and background? I really like. I feel like I use it correctly, but whatever. So, you know, I think that like Dayton's is kind of the big one in many ways. Like, I really think Dayton is the one you have to get because you're coming in riding an emotional high, knowing you're capable of beating teams of, like, precisely Dayton's caliber. Because I think Dayton and Rhode Island are very much in that same tier. And knowing that you're capable of beating them without, you know, the two who have been your best players this year. So I think, like, if you can't take advantage of this one and steal that one, you know, that's going to be the one that that got away. At VCU in any year is hard. At VCU, on short rest where you found out it, where you didn't have it factored into your schedule is even harder. Granted, you know, everybody deals with that this year to an extent, but still really tough. And then Mark Schmidt with basically one day to prepare and no fans to give you, you know, a sort an edge at home is damn near impossible, especially with this group for Monty. That's very good.
So that to me
makes the Dayton game the game of the stretch. Because if you beat Dayton, you'd move to 7-2 in the league. And even if you lose the next two, you still have a fringe shot. Not even fringe. Like, no, yeah, fringe. Shot at a 9-4 finish in the Atlantic 10, which, if it gets you a win on the last day of the season against Richmond, could be the difference between a double bye and not, because Richmond is like right in that range. So if you handed them their what would be like their fourth loss and you won the tiebreaker, you know, you're in a good spot. Now, of course, there's a million things you could, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen. There could be another game rescheduled. It looks like the league is trying to protect St. Louis, and they have so many games to make up that I doubt they send them out to us. But anyway, you know, there's a million things that could happen because of the nature of the season. You know, teams playing completely different schedules. Some teams may get in all 18. Others may barely get 10. So, you know, it'll be difficult to figure out. But even if you lose to VCU and Bonner, if you take this Dayton game, you're right in the mix. Because I forget where I heard it, but maybe somebody said it. I could be totally wrong, but I have a hunch Trey will be back later in the year. I don't think this is a... I think there's a chance this shuts him down for the year, but I think he's a competitor, and I think, you know, it's clearly not something that is like hot. He was walking around fine. You know, it's clearly serious, but it's not unrecoverable, if you will. And I just think he's such a competitor, he'd find a way to play in March anyway. So let's say you don't have him through these next three, but you then, you know, 2 weeks from now or whatever, get him for, I think it's like at St. Joe's maybe, and you get, or at Duquesne. I think UMass matches up well with Duquesne. And I think, you know, that can be a win. So if Trey returns for Duquesne, for St. Joe's, Richmond, like those final three, and you sweep them, which is not, you know, not out of the question. Even if you lose these next two, you could still be finish in the top four. Now, if you take two of three, you're really on the inside track. You know, I mean, you're there. But really focusing on Tuesday, I think that's crucial. And, you know, even if we lose these two, the two guys are still out, Noah and Trey. Even if that's the case, I think UMass can beat Dayton. Dayton has lost to LaSalle and Fordham this year. You know, they're extremely inconsistent. They do have talent. They do have maybe the best player in the league in Crutcher. But, you know, they're not terribly deep. They're flawed in many ways. They're going to be on the road. McCall, you know, coached with Anthony Grant and knows his schemes pretty well. So if ever there was a time to do the improbable and be this shorthanded team and win another one, it would be right after consecutive wins and sort of before the magic of a run like that without two of your stars, you know, fades. I think you got to kind of catch lightning in the bottle, and then that can give the team enough for juice. So it's a huge one. But if you would ask me, where do we go from here tonight after a loss and I think honestly a lot of us were expecting. I mean, we were double-digit favorites when this thing closed. The odds went from like 8 or 7, I think, to 10. You know, Vegas did not have a lot of faith in UMass tonight. And I'll be honest, I didn't either. But I think, like, had we lost tonight, it's just amazing. It's amazing what a win like this can do in terms of just changing the narrative. I mean, you know, the analytics people will say, like, it's, every game is the same. But, like, that's just one I know is true, you know, empirically. But especially in college basketball, where the game, in this year, where games are scarce and, you know, momentum is so big. You just can't tell me that tonight is not, like, a pro. It's not, I don't want to say program-altering win, but it's a narrative-transforming win, because if you lost tonight, which people would have expected, then everybody would have just resigned themselves to the fact that, you know, if Trey and Noah are out, we're just, this is who we are, and we can't really blame anyone, because, you know, no team that loses really their two top players, you know, can be. You know, you can't expect anything. And we just sort of all would have had that, like, whatever. And then you could easily foresee, like, three straight losses after tonight. And then all of a sudden they're 5-6. And it's like, well, what are you going to do with McCall? You know, can you blame him? He did lose his two best guys. You know, he's got more time on his contract. And it just would have been this endless, like, who's going to transfer? Now it's like, oh my God, we have the depth that we've been cultivating that we aren't always able to exploit because of injuries and challenges of getting people minutes is such an asset. And Mark Gasparini really actually is kind of good. And there's a reason he averaged double figures for 3 years in a row in Division I basketball. And Carl Pierre is catching freshman year Carl Pierre vibes and, you know, burying key threes that take games from, you know, being, like, down to the wire possible losses to double-figured victories. And, like, you know, T.J. Weeks is taking charges and playing more efficiently. And, you know, J.G. is able to show off his athleticism despite, you know, taking probably a few too many shots. He got to the cup brilliantly. And, oh, my God! Kyrell McCrory is as good as Sage said he was. Sorry, that was a little flex. But I've been clamoring for that kid to play a ton. And then he was out right after he started getting good. He missed like four games because of that mysterious injury or whatever it was. And now he's back, and it's like, he played 27 minutes saying he was 11-11. I mean, he was the best player on the floor at points. He had a stretch in the first half, maybe? Yeah, where he like had a ridiculous block, came down, like, scored, then got, like, a steal or, like, a rebound, a defensive rebound, then came back on the other end and, like, buried a corner three. I was just like, holy shit, this kid is balling. And so, if that kind of depth, and even Debaji Walker, like, great defensively, and he's playing with, like, one hand, had a couple hoops, too. You know, DeAndre Dominguez, huge and one when the game was, like, we were down three and it was, like, getting up-tempo and it wasn't looking so good. Colton Mitchell, like, you know, gave us some quality minutes when JG went down. And so all of a sudden, it's like this pail has lifted, and all that potential that you kind of knew was there just, like, blossomed, and what it took was losing two guys who have had the ball in their hands in many ways the majority of the time. Now, let me be eternally clear. And I want to put this to rest. I don't think, and no one has suggested it, but we are not better without those two players. Like, let's just call it for what it is. However, I was thinking about this, and it came to me tonight and a little bit after the last show. Matt McCall's biggest strength and biggest weakness, depending on who's analyzing it, is that his offense in many ways is not run through Trey. Actually, I shouldn't say that. His offenses not tend to be run through one player. And that kind of mirrors a lot of those Florida teams, which were very balanced. You know, you recall those groups. It was never like one dominant guy. They had several NBA guys, and they won two national titles. So that helps. But McCall's offenses do not typically favor one person. And to an extent, he's had to change that because of Trey's just incredible talent. But in some weird way, Matt himself probably felt a little free tonight, a little freer, because he had to run actions for everyone. And I think it made us a little bit more unpredictable. I mean, Rhodey apparently, even though it seemed like everybody knew Trey wasn't going to play, David Cox after the game said that they were planning their week around Trey and was like, okay, dude. But either way, I think for now, teams lacking that familiarity with what we do without Trey, and then, you know, you combine that with, like, the Gasperini emergence, it really fucked with them. Like, it just threw them off. So, I'm not saying, well, of course I'm not saying we're better without them, but I am saying on some crazy level, I think McCall is a little more freed without having, because Noah has the ball in his hands a lot too. They're on a lot of pick and roll. And so, I think that, like, I don't know, that's just like, when Matt was running offense for his first year, you know, with C.J. Anderson and Pipkins and, you know, Rashawn Holloway, yes, it was all the Pipkins show eventually, but I feel like in the early part of that season, looked a little bit like tonight. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see where we go from here, but I think, you know, if Trey and Noah get back, like, there really is clear-cut potential for this team to win the league. I've said that all along. The league is down. There's a lot of challenges. But look, some of it I want, you know, this is where I'm a little torn. Some of it's just, like, they played really hard and they hit a few more open shots. And you're like, can they do that every night? Because if they can, then, you know, the sky's the limit. But, and, of course, they're healthy. But, yeah, so the popcorn's really good. And I don't have much else to say, but that's where we are at this point. Let's go to the mailbag. So, as always, we are being brought to you by the fine folks at Five College Movers. World-class, stress-free moving in the Pioneer Valley and beyond. Call Pat and the gang. Tell them we sent you. Tell them you're a pod listener. They'll take fine care of you, as you know. All right. So, mailbag questions, and they're coming in furiously here, even though I asked for them late. Real Mike R91, stalwart listener of the program. Great first question. Should Kyro start, or should Kyro be that impact energy sub to change the tide of the game? So, it's a great question. I think I've realized that something that irritates me, and McCall does this, is the tendency among a lot of coaches, and these days I watch so much less basketball than I used to, so tell me if I'm making this up, but of a lot of coaches at the college level to bring their starters back for the second half, I just don't like that, right? Like, you knew Kyro was fantastic in the first half, and you had a break, and I think Kyro is getting his legs back. He looked tired a couple of points. But he has legs. Just go fucking put him in. And I think there was a moment in the early second half where Rhodey was kind of cutting the lead, and it was in part because I felt like, why were we playing TJ and Carl together? And again, I want to be very clear. I love both those kids. I just don't think that they need to be on the court at the same time unless they're both shooting lights out. And, like, tonight Carl was and TJ wasn't. Sometimes it's the opposite. So just ride the hot hand. But, yeah, in that case, it's a no-brainer that he should be starting the second half. Whether he should be starting the first, I don't know, and I'm not sure it entirely matters. But I do think once he's established himself and you get a feel of, you know, and obviously halftime changes the
dynamic things. He gives people time. But I still think, like, you know, you want to ride who was good in the first half. So that's just a personal preference thing. Pat Conroy, 89, says, will my in-laws ever look at me the same after my behavior tonight? Will my neck ever recover after my Gasparini 3 celebration? If the answers are no, it doesn't matter. It was worth it. Well, you already answered your question, but I don't know your in-laws. I feel like that's a... like, some in-laws really appreciate that. Like, oh, I love his passion. Like, it shows that he's, like, alive and, like, cares about things. And others would be like, you're a fucking freak. It's UMass basketball. Like, the Super Bowl's tomorrow, you know? So hopefully you're married to the former. But I can't help you there. Nathan Strauss says, what are you going to name to her next child? And why is it Mark McCrory Sage? What are you going to name your next? I think he means your next child, not to her next child. I don't know. Kids are fucking expensive, and I live in a really expensive place. So I would love to have a third, but if you really want to get into the details, daycare is like as big an expense as fucking rent. It's nuts. So I don't want to have two kids in daycare at the same time. I'm going to have this other one in daycare for at least like two more. My second one, who's not there now because he's been like home with us because we're working from home. Anyway, once it frees up, I'd love to have another one. But by that point, my wife, who's 2.5 years older than me, you know, will be like going on 40. Anyway, I'm not going to name my kids after Mark Gasparini or Cairo McCrory, although Cairo would be a boss fucking name. And Mark, if I did a Mark, it would be after Marcus Camby. Matt Broderick, whose handle is Not My Day Off, who's a great friend of the show and very funny, you should follow him. I think he's a novelist or a writer. Interesting takes, funny takes. Says, this team has shown some incredible growth, especially on display tonight, was their ball movement around the hoop from day one to now. What do you see as the most improved aspect of the play? It's a really good question, because tracking improvements over the course of the season is very difficult with this group. A, because there's been so many breaks in the season, and it's like practice has been cut up, and it's just very hard to find coherence. And also because, I don't know, the Davidson game I missed like 10 minutes of. Fordham game I missed like almost a half of. There's the only games I missed any of all year. I note that because there hasn't really been basketball besides those two and tonight in like 3 or 4 weeks. So it's like hard to, you know, say to the course of the season. Certainly you could do like tonight versus, you know, like the last game. But I would actually say team defense. I mean, we gave up, what we gave up tonight? I don't know, like 63, 64. Fordham, we gave up 54. Davidson, you know, we lost, but we still gave up under 70. I'm just doing this off the top of my head. Who was before that? Was it the LaSalle game where we kind of smoked them? Like, we started defending in the LaSalle game, or I don't know, in one of these games, and I think the team defense has been improved. I think sometimes this team is so kind of moody in their play, and that, like, they play really hard when things are going well sometimes. It's a lot of college teams. But I was going to say, they... what was I going to say? My brain just totally fried right now. Excuse me. It's late. I don't know where I was going with that. Yeah, so team defense is the most improved aspect of the play. I don't know. I had a really good point. I just totally lost it. Scott Perkins, my man, UMass JSP, Cape Cod guy, also a Worcester guy. How about coming out with a front line of Ronnie DeGray, Trey, and Gasparini with Noah Fernandez and JG at guards, dominating the boards, then CP sixth man? I actually really like that. It kind of makes no sense in terms of, like, McCall basically has four guys on the perimeter. So, I mean, and I don't see him playing Trey on the perimeter, so it's, like, not really going to happen. Well, the prospect of that lineup just brings me back to a different era of college basketball and just kind of makes me happy in that, like, and it just gives you, like, two tough, penetrating point guards, like a glue guy in DeGray and, like, two, like, banger bigs down low. And it just reminds you of a time when the three-pointer wasn't as prominent in the game or was, you know, wasn't nearly as prominent in the game. You know, and I would love that. But it's not going to happen. And he's never not going to start Carl. Squirt's 14 assists. Is this team going to go dancing? Look, you never say never. You have a lot of opportunities coming up. The health situation is so unclear, but at the end of the day, you're going to have to win the league. You know, even if you won out in league this year, and you won your final, I guess if you went 11-2 in league and you really won every game, including at VCU, if you went 11-2, we were fucking 1-2 in non-league play, so you'd be 12-4. And then if you won 2 games, 14-4, and lost in the final to, like, Bonnie or St. Louis, maybe, but I doubt it. You don't have any non-league wins against irrelevant teams, you know. I doubt it. But, so, you know, they'd have to win the league. And if everybody's healthy, it's very possible. They could also lose the first game. I don't want to play, frankly, I don't play Rhode Island or LaSalle again. I don't think we can beat them a third time. Either of those teams. It'd be fine playing Fordham a third time. It's not going to happen, probably. R. Sitchman says, is Cairo real? Does he have a brother? I don't know what he means by is he real. Of course he's real. He's a UMass basketball player. I don't believe he has a brother. I guess he's saying it's surreal, like his performance was so masterful. He was great tonight. Eli Sloven, a stalwart listener of the program, says, over under on how long it takes me to get to 1K. 1K, of course, being 1,000 Twitter followers. Just follow Sloven. If you don't, like, at Eli Sloven, like, you know who he is if you listen to the show. He's a freshman at UMass, grew up in Amherst, diehard fan of the show, really trying to get to 1,000, which I can't believe he's not at, because I feel like if you follow me, you probably follow him, but I guess that's not really true. Because a lot of people from other programs around the league who follow me, they're not, you know, he's like more clear-cut UMass guy. It's 9:36. Just follow him. But I think you'll get there, Eli. I'd say, like, you know, stay grinding. Keep working. Don't let up. You'll have your moment. It's a day-by-day process. These followers don't come easy in these streets. And I'd say you could get to 1,000. Doing it the right way. Not cheating, you know. I don't want you doing, like, buying followers. That's like steroids. I think you can get there by, I'd say, like, March 30th, end of March Madness. Get some good March Madness takes in. I mean, look, if UMass was in the tournament, the vibe for you would be, like, to do an epic Selection Sunday thread. And, like, it's sort of like, now, as a freshman, I can't believe, like, a little emo. It's like, I grew up in Amherst. And then, like, what that does is all the casual UMass fan kids who are, like, reading UMass on Twitter will get, like, you know, you'll get, like, quote tweeted by UMass, but, like, thread. And then all these, like, random UMass kids who don't really listen to the show or don't really follow UMass athletics even, but are, like, hyped because their, you know, team is in the NCAA tournament, they'll check out the thread. You get, like, 23 followers out of it, and you'll be well on your way. Okay. Scotty doesn't know one. There's a lot going on in that handle. And it's there was, of course, the old song, Scotty doesn't know, Scotty doesn't know. Who's that by? Jimmy Eat World, maybe? Bennett, throw that in if you can. But it's Scotty doesn't know, not K-N-O-W, it's no as in the like N-O and then one. So no one or number one. Is he saying Scotty doesn't is number one? Or is he saying Scotty doesn't know one? Or is he saying Scotty doesn't know anyone? Anyway, Scotty doesn't know one. Are you worried about beating URI 3 times in a row if we had to see them if we see them in the conference tournament. Hard to go 3-0 against a team in one season. Yeah, I actually just alluded to that, so you're totally right. Good flag. I thought of it too. Zach is God. Was this win just because URI was shooting terribly from outside? They didn't hit a three. If I'm not mistaken, Rhodey is a horrible three-point shooting team, or at least they were last year. Obviously, very different roster, but that's kind of who they are, and they don't take a ton of threes. So, no, it was not. And, like, they're not a good three-point shooting team. Like, the thing is, Rhodey could have beat us. Like, they just didn't play hard at points. And I'm kind of surprised that they didn't take that game over because they had so many athletes. And they just, like, took possessions off. What won us that game was our defensive intensity in the second half, down low in particular. Like, there were just some plays where we wouldn't take no for an answer. And, you know, does it help that they couldn't shoot for shit? Yeah, but that's not why we won the game. And they're a bad three-point shooting team in general. So, yeah. UMass Dynasty says, 5 weeks from today's Selection Sunday, which, that's bonkers to me. Like, the season just started, but okay. 5 weeks from holy shit. So, no, isn't it 6 weeks? Today's the 6th, or now it's the 7th, so 14th is 1, 21st is 2, 28th is 3. Yeah, wow, holy shit, you're right. What's your prediction on where UMass stands on that day? I can't believe it's going to be CBI. That's weird if they're going to do that during COVID. Imagine, like, trying to justify to public health officials that you need to play the CBI. It's just not a necessary event. I don't even know if there's going to be an NIT. I have no idea, but has anyone heard? By the way, one of the funniest and sort of saddest things I've ever heard of in the sports world, but something I kind of quietly respect, is that for a time, and I don't know if this person still exists, there was an NIT bracketologist. That is art. I mean, that it was like, wow, what a country. You know, that I mean, like, what a world. Like, that there's, imagine, like, you're traveling through the mountains of Nepal with a Sherpa, and you're, you know, doing whatever it is a yuppie hiker does in Southeast Asia. And is that even Southeast Asia? I don't know. And, you know, someone's like, oh, what do? You know, on the trip, some cardiac surgeon or some shit. I was like, and what do? You know? And the guy's like, you know, there's another guy there. He's like a diamond wholesaler in like Zurich or some shit. And there's another guy there, and it's like a Billy Joel song, but like, you know, in one of those, like, what are those places that you eat on the mountain when you're hiking? I don't know what they're called. I'm not much of a hiker. So it's like the Zurich, you know, guy, the Zurich diamond wholesaler, the like cardiologist from Seattle, and you know, just kind of like a trust fund rich kid who's like, you know, 35 and like does whatever he does. Maybe he's a chiropractor or something, and that's like the other guy on the trip. And then you're there and you're just like a passionate hiker. You see, like, you get all your savings. You're like, what do? And he's like, I'm an NIT bracketologist. Like, you know how many steps you have to get into to explain that? It's like, well, I cover sports. You know, okay, you're a sports writer. Well, kind of. I'm kind of. They're like, are you like an analytics person in sports? Like an analyst for teams? Like, kind of. Kind of. And then, like, the cardiologist remembers, oh, yeah, he went to Wake Forest or whatever. I like college basketball. So you do, like, that guy, like, you're like that guy Lenardi on ESPN. You know, you found a college basketball fan in the middle of Nepal. And the guy goes, no, I'm like the Lenardi for the NIT. And the Zurich guy and the trust fund guy are just so fucking confused. And then I guess you continue hiking. I don't know. I think that it's just completely dependent on if Trey comes back. So, you know, I mean, I think I would say if Trey and Noah are back, it's like NIT is definitely feasible, particularly if you win 2 of 3 this week. But look, it's not necessarily going to get totally easier even after this week. I mean, yeah, that St. Joe's team sucks, but I'm always worried. Like, win one game, you know? And Duquesne is really getting pretty good. We match up well with them, but they're getting good. Richmond at home is a hard game, you know? So of the six games coming up, we could you know, go 1-5, and we could go 4-2. and I would love a 4-2, but we'll see. Jake Barnes, do you see this team playing more zone in the future, or was it just for this game? You know, I hope they do. I mean, they looked great in it, and it arguably won the game. It was a great adjustment. I think they should go to it, particularly if Noah and Trey aren't back, you know, and you have to, you know, rest guys and mix and match lineups. Because the thing about, like, Noah and Trey is, like, they give you a sense of identity almost by default, just because one's, like, a clear-cut, they're back to the basket big, and one is, like, a speedy, small little point guard who can also shoot it. And just definitionally, like, in terms of role setting, I think those two things kind of lend themselves to just a sense of, like, just where people are going to go on the floor. And now you have – and maybe it makes this an interesting matchup, because now you kind of have really, like, in a certain sense, eight of your nine guys who are getting meaningful minutes tonight – shit, I just got hiccups – who are getting meaningful minutes tonight, you know, aren't – they're all kind of hybrid guys. I mean, toward the end there, we had, like, Carl Pierre bringing the ball up the court. So, you know, basically all those guys, JG's pretty tall. Like, everybody's basically a 6'3 to 6', other than Mark Gasparini, a 6'3 to 6'8 kind of, you know, kind of player. And that might lend itself a little bit to, you know, switching the defenses. I don't know. I have to think about that in terms of what that really looks like, but I suspect it's something, you know, you want to play if there are matchup challenges one way or the other. Gosh, hiccups are wild, huh? Just a wild concept. UMassHoops.com says, what's your prediction for this hell week we have coming, home for Dayton, trip to VCU, then short rest for Urbana? Yeah, I've kind of alluded to this a bunch, but I think 1-2 is the prediction. I mean, if he easily be 3-0, but, like, and if Trey gets back and Noah gets back, I think you could say 2-1. But at VCU and then such short rest of honor, it's basically as unpleasant a scenario as you can get in the A-10 conference this year. I mean, and like, just the fact that VCU was thrown in, like, these kids didn't know they were going to have a flight. You know, they thought, like, just psychologically in their head, they thought they were coming home for two games, and now you got to, you know, play a quick one. Then, like, I don't know if you charter a flight. You know, traveling during COVID is really stressful. Like, it's the first time they've been on a plane, I think, all season. Maybe they took a plane down to D.C., I guess. But, you know, maybe second time all year. It's just brutal. I mean, it's absolutely brutal. And classes started. I mean, it's just, you can't get a shittier scenario. I just feel for these kids in this regard. But who knows? Maybe they have a "we don't give a fuck" attitude, and they just have an edge there, and they keep rolling. I mean, who knows? Tonight really just changed everything in terms of narrative. The way the cookie crumbles. Oracle McMystery, Ghost McHistory is his handle. Great guy, Dayton fan, really funny. How pissed would we be when LaSalle beats you on Sunday of A-10s? And I'll just read to you what I wrote jokingly. I said, "I'll be thrilled for the goal of standard." Those are the LaSalle guys who came on the show. And then I'll drive to Philly and burn down Gold Arena once and for all before turning myself into law enforcement, but not before a press conference at Four Seasons Landscaping. my guys at OnlyFans wrote back, beautifully said. They're so funny. They're so fucking good. Kevin Rodak says, how good is Ronnie DeGray? Ronnie's great, man. First half in particular, he was outstanding. I think he got a little tired late, and I was actually clamoring for Dibaji for defensive purposes, but Ronnie in that first half, like, his ability to attack angles, excuse me, to attack at the right angle is so impressive. Like,
he gets the ball top of the key sometime, and you're like, why is he going downhill and driving right now? And it's like he sees a crease, almost like a great running back, and he just sort of finds his way there, and all of a sudden it's like two steps, layup. And it's like, wow, that's really impressive. And I think in the first half he hit a huge open three to stop the bleeding for a moment, and he just makes plays like that. He's just so solid. And it never looks like he's, phased. Sometimes you're like, is he trying? Like the nonchalant line that Jay, or was it Lackadaisical? I forget what he said, but Jay Burnham said, and then his mom was joking on Twitter about it, like he was annoyed by it. But it's not that he plays with great intensity, but it's like he just strikes. There's like a silent assassin thing there, that's really appealing. Let's see. Did I miss any others? I swear I thought there were more questions, but a lot of talk about starting five. This is mostly underscore David. A lot of talk about starting five, but this team is serious depth. You have 200 minutes. Who gets what? Now, I don't know if he's referring to with Trey and Noah in the lineup. Obviously, that changes dramatically. But with them out of the lineup, I'd give JG like 30, because I think at least 30, because he's so good at getting to the rim. I know he missed some shots tonight, and it's like sometimes you're like, doesn't even look like he's that good, and he's like, doesn't look fast. I'm starting to see, I think, why he was not sought after by certain power fives, because like he does this thing where you're like, he's slow, and he's actually like the fastest guy on the court, but he looks slow. It's the weirdest thing. And so he'll like be dribbling, and you're like, what is he doing? Where is he going? And then like you'll see like in two steps, his steps will like just get him to the rim. And he's missed a bunch of these layups, so I think people are maybe overlooking how impressive it is. But like his strides take these like almost like contorted motions, and somehow he ends up at the rim and gets a good look. And eventually those are really going to go down. And obviously his shot looks a little weird, so that's another reason people overlook him, but he's so solid, and he's a great defender. So 30 minutes. I would say Carl TJ, like, a game, so 40, right? Like, it could be 40 for one, 0 for the other one day, and it could be 20 and 20. And, like, realistically, we'll probably give each, like, 20, 22. I mean, it's... Let's say 21 and a half, so 43 between the two. So you have 43 there. JG is 73. It's going to be hard to add. Gasperini's got to play a ton. They just don't have other choices. So it's 73, and I'm going to give Gasperini. I think he had 27 tonight, I thought I saw somewhere. I'm not going to give him that many, but I'm going to give him 25. So we're at 90. I guess it's to 98. So Cairo's got to play 25. I mean, he's so solid. And Ronnie's got to play 25. So that's 50. So that's at 148. Dibagi is fucking good. Like, he's really good defensively. I would like him to play 20 minutes. I know that. Maybe. I just think he's good. He's a good rotation guy. So that gets you to, what was that, 148? So 20 minutes is 168. So let's say he gets 18. That's 166. And then Colton plays like, he can play 8, so that's 174, and Dominguez can play a 10, so that's 184, so I have 16 minutes to play with. I hope I'm not missing anyone. I feel like an asshole. So 16 minutes to play with that group tonight. It's like if Carl's hot, he can have 14. Like, I don't care. Like, he did tonight. That's where they're going now. It's like he had 36 minutes tonight. So if he's playing hot, like, he can get 14 more. I don't care. Whoever it is, like, JG can go 35 if he's playing really well. Cairo could go 30. So you just have those. I like having those 16 to play around with. Totally different question.
question with Noah and Trey that I'm not even going to ponder right now because my brain's increasingly shot and I want to go to bed. Let's see what else. Hang on. My mentions are out of control tonight. Like, probably an all-time record for Twitter engagement. You people are awesome. That's such a fun night. I'm probably missing someone, and I sincerely apologize. I feel like sometimes people will send me questions. They'll be like they'll DM them, and be like, for the next pod, and I invariably never go and check them, like, when the actual show comes. So, apologies on that. Let me just see. Any other questions? I got the Cairo one. I got this. I got that. Some, like, VCU fan tried to do a fuck, marry, or kill with Jordan Goodwin, Jalen Crutcher, and Jacob Gilliard. I haven't watched enough Dayton. Enough SLU or Richmond to say. Also, that's, like, not that funny. Let's see, is there anything that I missed? Just want to make sure I get to all of them. Zilla or Kong? I don't really know what that's a reference to. From Eaton Dubs is the person's handle. Like Godzilla or King Kong? I haven't seen either in so long that I'm not sure I know the difference. Like, I don't know if I could pick it out right now. So that's all we got for the show. Here we go. Wait, this person said not a question, but... Well, we'll see. Should we give this person the last word? I'm not sure I want to say who it is because maybe they don't want me to put this out there, but they say, not a question. But same reason we won tonight is why I'm in agreement on matching up against SLU. Teams that rely on athleticism and aren't great shooting offensive set teams are very susceptible to a good shooting / effort night from us. This is really spot on, by the way. This is a great analysis. I love when people send me good DMs like this. SLU, URI, VCU, Dayton, a lot of years, and a lot of the bottom of the conference. Give me that side of bracket, come tourney. Yeah, I could not agree with this analysis more. Like, this is totally spot on, very smart. I could not agree with this more, and I've said it almost as long as the show's been on the air, which is, like, I talked about last week, the roll the ball out in team play teams, we're better coached than them, and we're capable of playing that style if we want, and so... I always feel like at least we have a fighter's chance, puncher's chance. Is that the phrase? And yeah, it's much more Richmond, Davidson, St. Bonaventure that terrify me. Duquesne is, I guess, kind of in between the two, but I think we've matched up fairly well with them. So, I am VCU, Dayton, we will have a chance in those games. Now, both of those teams have the athletes and the talent that if we don't play well, they could do the same thing on us, right? But it's not like St. Bonaventure where schematically you're like, oh shit, how are we going to prepare for these guys? And I wonder, playing them with such short rest, if we had fans, I really do think that would be big, just like to give the team a boost. But I really do think with that Bonnie group is like maybe not having no time to prep could be a good thing. It could totally go either way, but it's like they're so hard to plan for that maybe it's almost better to just like say fuck it and go play, and maybe you fuck with them and you bring, I hope Trey, it would be awesome if Trey could come back for that game, because I think like that if Schmidt doesn't prepare for us, like if he scouts plans for us under the assumption that Trey is not going to be there and then he comes back, like that gives us a schematic edge in terms of preparation stuff. So a great way to end it. I hope you enjoy the episode and maybe we'll do another one this week after one of these games. It could be a hard week again. I'm aware of that. It's a long, strange season. The injuries aren't fun, but man, tonight just was special. And I was so glad to share it with all you guys on Twitter. Once again, from New York City, this is Curry Hicks Age as the former co-host of the pod, the late, great, oh, he's not dead, I shouldn't call him late, great, in fact, tonight he said he might come on the show, the great Andrew Kalagi, a.k.a. A. Kalagi for longtime listeners, would say. Love you. We out.